there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
I respect you, and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, Jaya.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Stephen Robinson says hello to everyone except Brett Weinstein. It's true. Brett is not with us tonight, although to his credit, it's not intentional. He is not intentionally not with us. He is simply not with us. Max Mercer says BTC at 70K. Maybe. End of the line, Joel says, Rebecca Hargreaves, blonde, had her podcast censored from Spotify today. Well, that is sad. That is sad. Because I think we are in a special moment where the mainstream social media has been, they're afraid. And they've been reducing on censorship, apparently. But you can feel that it's coming back and it's not far. You can feel that All it would take would be $1 million donation from Ben Shapiro or something like this, or buying of lots of ads, and he would get his competition completely abolished. It's unfortunate, but I think we must enjoy the relative diminishment of censorship, but we must also be aware that it's coming back at some point. I've been taking pictures all day, because I'm in writing the White People Food, my book. I need to illustrate every aspect, the making of a sauce. Here I'm making a stock. You have a carcass of chicken, celery, onion, carrots, roasted in the oven for 45 minutes. This allows you to brown aspects of the vegetables and meat, and then you put them in water and you boil them for 8 hours. And you get an increasingly concentrated result. I've also taken picture because I had my special biscuit breads, in which that I will show the recipe for in the book. But I wanted also a recipe for classical American biscuit, butter biscuit. Look at them, fluffy, made with cake flour, because cake flour has 6% proteins. All-purpose flour has 9% protein, and bread flour has 13% protein. And this influences how much of a stretchy, solid structure you will have in a bread. That's why bread flour is harder to work with, but you're going to have more of a structure, and your bubble will bubble into filaments. All-purpose flour, you're going to get somewhere in between the two, whereas the cake flour, you're going to have non-filamented, non-protein bubbles. So you have more like a cake structure, which gives just these bubbles, and it's more fluffy. So it's easier for the bubble to make it into a cake batter, to make it up. But at the same time, you don't have that chewy bread aspect. So those are the trade-offs when you range from classical French bread to more cake-like bread, more English-style type breads, and you need to deal with with these trade-offs. Defenestrator says Max Mercer, BTC goes to 100K in January. It's also possible. I don't know which way it will go. I was expecting a big November. It didn't come, so we'll see. We'll see. I had taken other pictures today. Let's have a look. What did I have? Oh, yeah. I'm also making one-liner recipes. So recipes that are expressible in less than 15 words. So here you have a pork fillet cut them in medallion, put maple syrup in a pan with Dijon mustard, cilantro herbs, salt and pepper. And there you go. You got a whole sauce. You got super tender pork medallions. And it's all expressed in one-liner recipes. I currently have 100 one-liner recipes for each part of each animal. So, and also for certain vegetables. So what do you do with this or that? How do you get rid of chicken heart? How do you pass chicken livers? Well, I have a recipe, a one-liner recipe for each. And I now have 160 pages written for white people food. My target is about 300. So I guess we can say I have reached the halfway point in the writing of white people food. John Drake says 50 or 150K in the next year. It doesn't matter. BTC will be a million plus in decade regardless. Yeah, that's how I see it. That's how I see it. I don't see BTC failing long term. Simon Tesfaye says, Jeff, do you eat lamb meat? I do, not regularly because it's a pricey meat. But yeah, sometimes if I want luxury or exploration, I will. I used to buy with Mama JF. We did a lot of lambs. She loved buying at Walmart the $38 full leg of lamb. And it's just it's a meat that I, in my everyday life, I don't buy it much. I buy it as part of social culinary experimentation, but in my everyday life, I'm not going to just eat lamb because I want to eat more simple stuff. And anyways, if I get too much of a good meat, it's not good for my diet and my calories. So I'd rather eat just average meat, basic meats, basic beef, if I'm going to eat meat alone. Grieve says, please be in a humorous mood on Millennial this year, JF. You make my elderly mother laugh every year. Okay. I'll try to think very hard about your elderly mother and to satisfy so that my appearance satisfies her specifically. I will work very hard. I will prepare. I'll be like elderly mother in my mind. I need to satisfy her. Talking about Bitcoin, someone is going to jail. Keon Rodriguez. Tonight is the last time I will sleep in my own bed next to my loving wife. For the next 5 years, I will be housed in a federal prison at taxpayer expense for a crime without a victim. Just one of many victims of lawfare perpetrated by a weaponized Biden DOJ, where truth and justice were sidelined in favor of a political anti-innovation agenda. So he is one of the programmers behind the Samurai Wallet. I don't know the detail of this prosecution. I think he was prosecuted harshly and was forced kind of into a plea. So he accepted to plea for knowingly transferring proceeds of criminality. This is a very very out there concept that the leftists love to use, because very often you have these people. This guy was developing a form of Bitcoin transaction that was shaking stuff together, mixing, tumbling. So basically what a lot of people have been in trouble with also on the ETH blockchain. But these guys tried doing it with the BTC blockchain, and they ended up being accused of transferring $100 million of criminal proceeds. What does that mean? Is the standard of evidence satisfactory? I have no clue. I have no clue. Defenestrator says, Jeff, have you tried Polish Smalek? It's a lard spread made with caramelized onion, bacon, etc. No, I never heard about it. I will take note of it. The Smalek, Polish Smalek. I do have in the book Creton, which is the French version of this. It's a beautiful pork spread, ground pork spread absolutely delicious. One of the best things you can put on a toast. John Drake says the charge didn't even make sense. He never touched user funds. Exactly. So what we're looking at are developers, really. They develop software and people execute this software for their own purpose. It's, in my view, as an internet anarchist, this is the kind of thing that should be absolutely protected, even because it's, you're really making a software of privacy. But leftist government, they are truly protecting the cartel of banks, and they don't want Bitcoin to develop into something private. They will assume that you are criminal, and they will assume that you have criminal intent. John Drake says building privacy software was his crime. It's what it looks like, indeed. Justin McDaniel says, Jeff, what's your take on the sudden surge of white positivity on X lately? Well, we'll talk about this, and we'll talk about, yeah, the state of things this year. I have to prepare my year in review, which I'll do maybe next week. What a year. And it shows in a spectacular ending with this basically back and forth at TPUSA on the stage between Tucker Carlson and Ben Shapiro, each of them going at the other explicitly. Wow. We didn't see that coming. We didn't see it coming that Tucker Carlson would effectively be a rampant for Nick Fuentes in the mainstream, which is what's happening here. It's fascinating. And he's being criticized for it by Ben Shapiro. And what we realize is, yes, there is white positivity on Twitter. I think we won that fight. And I think the gains of it will just tumble down and tumble down. I think it's something you'll hear me less and less talk about because we crushed. We crushed. There's like people are sensitive at this point. It's like they're not going to talk against white people anymore. It is incredible what's been happening in the last few years. Now, that's a long-term cultural victory. You even leftists are shy about anti-white hatred. They know there's nothing to gain in it. Everyone has been shut down on this subject. So we won. We won solidly. And we're not even collecting all the rewards yet. It's all going to build up down the line. Which is why it's very important, this book I'm writing, White People Food, because it's going to kind of stick the win in. Like in the culinary lives of many modern American women. This book will be my way to get into the pants of the American woman, to get into her kitchen. And I will be recording forever. I have to find a way to disable this. And we will be recording forever that from now on, white culture is a thing, and we need to be protective of it, and we need to be respectful of it. And everyone, it's going to be so clear from these recipes. It's going to be so clear that there is such a thing as white people food. It's going to be undeniable. If I bring you meat pie, if I bring you sandwich cake from Sweden, if I bring you escargot from France, if I bring you baguette bread. Yes, those are the products of white European civilization. So on that, we won. What's interesting is there will still be a war. There will still be a war. U.S. Pepim has sent a super chat. He says, JF, do you only ever wear black like Johnny Cash? Absolutely. That's all I have. Now, this is a shirt for my show. I wear this only in my show. But I actually have alternative black shirts that I wear outside. So I have black shirts for nightly exits. I have my black shirt for my show. I have my black pyjama to live. And I have, literally, I have 3 to 4 kind of home pants that are black. And I have like 7 black t-shirts. Yeah, because there was a time where I was wearing only purple, dark purple and black. But I went full black at some point because first, it's the most neutral color. And it's also like I'm in a process of grief. I am like a grieving widow. I am in grief of a world in which we could dream. I am in grief of a world in which we could dream to have actual conversation, for people to be actually honest, for spam to be absent of our lives, for subversion, cultural subversions of all kind, to be out of the way. I am a widow. I am crying, and I'm like Erica Kirk, but for Western civilization. I am grieving for a world that was exciting and in which there was a promise of liberty, a promise of genuine search for the truth. All of this, I don't feel it at all. So yes, I'm white-pilled about a lot of cultural victories like the one you mentioned. Yes, white people are basic now have a seat at the table of respectable voices. End of the line, Joel says, don't start grief twerking. Is that a thing? I'm sure it's a thing. I'm sure there's a woman out there who was on her TikTok and her husband died, and I'm sure she started twerking as a kind of method of relief. Absolutely certain. Grief twerking. The term is unbelievable. Grief twerking. Grief. Oh, there's a guy who's named Grief who sends me a super chat. He says, thanks, JF. Welcome home. Well, thanks to you. And thanks for your support. So this schism is becoming very important, what's rising, because it's a mask falling for the Ben Shapiro's of this world. Nick Fuentes had done an analysis, I believe, a couple of months ago, and I retweeted it recently. Very important. Basically, Ben Shapiro and the Daily Wires of this world, they bought a monopoly. They bought a monopoly, and it was so vicious and dirty and criminal what they did. They started buying ads, and they flooded Facebook. They flooded other platforms with money and threats that, hey, you better put us forward and you better shut down these voices or else the ADL is going to start writing hit pieces about you. This whole system formed by Jewish threats from Jewish organized groups like the ADL and like Media Matters and that kind of thing, they basically partnered in a secret and at times perhaps not even coordinated way with the Ben Shapiro's of this world. And we've always done that reading. I've always said, you know, these voices like Charlie Kirk, that kind of stand silent in front of our censorship, these people are the biggest benefactors of our censorship. But I think at this point we can have an even more mature view of this, which is, it's not just that they were the passive benefactor. They made this shit happen. A network of threatening leftist, centrist organization and Jewish Zionist organization all got together between 2016 and 2020, and they ensured that voices like Charlie Kirk, Ben Shapiro would rise and that we would be shut down and that no talk of race could ever happen. This happened. And this is by the standard of regular U.S. law, not even as a reach or as a bizarre extrapolation. Just objectively, this is competitive malpractice. This is a violation of antitrust laws. This is the building of a monopoly. Because you're never supposed to take commercial actions that shut down your opponent. The only way you can shut down your opponent is by fair competition. We didn't get fair competition. We got TOS out of existence while these people were building followings. Followings that were unnatural, followings that potentially some of it was botted, but following that also wasn't this was not from the ground up. This was not natural. It wasn't spontaneous. It's all fake what was built. And today we have a Tucker Carlson who is willing to make himself a voice of those who were put aside, like Nick Fuentes. And he does this beautifully, making nods to Ben Shapiro, while presumably Ben Shapiro is in the crowd. And then Ben Shapiro is also scolding Tucker Carlson. But what we find is that ultimately, the true Ben Shapiro is undistinguishable from the left in terms of freedom of speech. He is basically a Zionist who is willing to shut down opposing voices as long as it helps his side shine. And he is willing to engage in basically a form of right-wing cancel culture. That's what's happening. We have a Ben Shapiro pushing at TPUSA for a guilt by association. You should be responsible for inviting this and for 2 degrees of communication with this guy. And Tucker Carlson responds extremely well to this and says, hey, I voted for something else. If I wanted the left, and then you ask yourself, well, what is so right-wing about Ben Shapiro? He covers news like the left. He demands censorship by the left. He teams with leftists to threaten and extort to elevate himself. What is really right-wing about Ben Shapiro? In fact, is he even anti-statist? I mean, he was rooting for the vaccine, so there you already have a failure of seeing a state invasion on individual rights. We definitely don't have a libertarian. So you have a statist. What makes Ben Shapiro right-wing? Social conservatism, maybe, in his private life and in his ideological opinions on the family, period. So you have people who have elevated themselves by cheating and with a mask on. And it's a bad situation that the Republican Party is in right now, because I don't know that they can get someone like me excited about their project. Because if the Republican Party is to be taken over by the Ben Shapiro side, I don't feel that I'll be particularly enthusiastic about it in the coming election and in Vance 2028. Now, they did fight over what Charlie Kirk would have wanted. Yes, end of the line, Joel.
Deplatform and denounce. Why haven't you denounced somebody else? The whole, like, Red Guard Cultural Revolution thing that we so hated and feared on the left that we did everything we could to usher in a new time where you could have an actual debate. I mean, this kind of was the whole point of Charlie Kirk's public life. And I think that... I think that he died for it. I really.
But here's the thing. Here's the unsaid here. Charlie Kirk was canceling people like Nick Fuentes. Charlie Kirk was acting in line with what the Ben Shapiros of this world wanted. Tucker Carlson took it to a new step. So it's interesting. Now, would Charlie Kirk have changed in the current era? Let's say Charlie Kirk was alive now. Would he have acted differently? Would he eventually have had an opening? I don't know. But certainly for all of his life, he stood more toward the Ben Shapiro, what Ben Shapiro today demands, which is cancel culture on the right. That was Charlie Kirk. Now, yes, Charlie Kirk was doing facts and logic debates, but not with anyone. Not with Nick Fuentes. Not with anyone with a racial position. Even not to an extent with people who oppose Israel seriously.
I believe that. And I know a lot.
So I believe that Tucker is kind of taking a liberty here. He is spreading in a direction the legacy of Charlie Kirk.
Thought about it because the last several months of Charlie's life were devoted in part to arguing about this event, in fact, this speech, in fact, my speech here.
So this is referring to the fact that the Zionist donors were asking for Tucker not to be invited because Tucker spoke to Candace, Tucker spoke to Nick, or Tucker shows opening to Nick. Don't invite Tucker. So we have here the kind of the realization of what Charlie Kirk wanted or was about to do, which is a degree of pivot. A degree of pivot against this guilt by association, neocon demands of cancel culture, which is a strength of inhibition of thought in the public domain, which is maintained simply for maintaining the American people in ignorance and in support of Israel's wars. USPP4Y says, precisely, Ben Shapiro uses leftist cancel culture, anti-racist arguments against white nationalism, but only against whites. Exactly. So we have to realize the danger of the current position. The right wing is fully infiltrated and controlled by people who are not deeply right wing in a governmental policy sense. By people who are agents of subversion for interests that they don't explicitly state are at the center of their life. Grief says, JF, on a scale of 1 to 10, does nothing ever happen? Is the meme real in your opinion? I always said that nothing ever happens. Until August, where I said we are about to have the four most happening months in history. In political history, or recent at least. And we got the Charlie Kirk assassination. See, I was right on this. Everyone was saying nothing ever happens, and I was agreeing. But in August, I felt that something was coming.
Which he asked me to do earlier this year, this summer, and was immediately put under just immense pressure from people who give money to Turning Point, I would assume good people, but who wanted him to take me off the roster. And this has all become public, and the whole thing is so sad that I never talk about it, except to say Charlie stood firm in his often stated and deeply held belief that people should be able to debate, and that if you have something valid to say, if you're telling the truth, you ought to be able to explain it calmly and in detail to people who don't agree with you, and that you shouldn't immediately resort to shut up racist. You shouldn't immediately go to motive. By the way, shut up racist is the number one reason I voted for Donald Trump. And because I'm just sick of it. I mean, first of all, if I was a racist, if I was a bigot, I would just say so. Okay, it's America. You're allowed to be whatever kind of person you want. I'm not. I'm sincerely opposed, have always been, and will always be. But the style of debate where you prevent the other side from talking or being heard because you immediately go to motive, well, I wonder why you're asking that question. I wonder why. Why are you asking that question? I detect in the question a certain evil in your soul. And everyone listening should know that listening to you implicates them. And that they someday may be asked to denounce you. And that friendship is not a reason to defend someone. Love is no defense. I kind of thought we'd reach the end of that. And as far as I'm concerned, we have. And I'm not going to play by those rules.
This is beautiful because there's currently a hop against Tucker. You know, there's people on X that are kind of revealing who they truly are when they say this, but there's people saying, I can't believe that Tucker said that he would support his brother if his brother went on a murder spree. But it's... it's like, what, there are people who wouldn't support their brother? This is so weird to me. You have conditional loyalties and then you have reasons to detach from people. I mean, it's kind of the ongoing sad state of civilization that, okay, we're at the point where Tucker says, I would kind of side with my brother even if he was on a murder spree, and maybe I would tell him I disagree with the murders, but I would kind of be supportive of him. The fact that this is shocking anyone is kind of telling you about what kind of society we live in. It's betrayal. It's not understanding that there are human ties between people that are more important than what others want you to do, what the state wants you to do. What it's bizarre that there are people who would think this is a point of attack against Tucker, because I think you, down the line, what it reveals is Tucker has a deeply Christian morality, and he has a kind of forgiving and people first conception of what links us. But not everyone has this, apparently. Justin McDaniel says, JF, the problem with Tucker is when he tried to characterize whites coming together as a people as a bad thing. Oh, definitely. I mean, Tucker is not out of the woodworks. But the fact that he's already taken a humanization direction with Nick and with Candace, although for different reasons and in a different angle, that is very good. That is very good. And the fact that he's out there saying we're not playing by the rules of cancel culture anymore, that is a progress. That is something I applaud. Now, of course, Tucker is one of these recalcitrant whites who refuse to, even in the face of obvious societal attacks, refuse to at least have pragmatic, temporary conception of why it's important to think of yourself as white. And it is. Now, this is almost forgivable if he's willing to at least hear the other side. If he's willing to fight a Ben Shapiro on, look, what you're practicing is very leftist, I like it. And Ben Shapiro was absolutely on fire. Fire of a hatred and fire of nervousness.
That actually get at the truth. If we agree with a guest, that's fine, but we should own it. So, for example, if you host a Hitler apologist, Nazi-loving, anti-American piece of refuse like Nick Fuentes...
And see, the crowd wasn't totally into it. They were, whoa, whoa.
You know, the Nick Fuentes who said that the vice president of the United States is a, quote, fat gay race traitor married to a Jeet. The person who said that Charlie Kirk was a, quote, retarded idiot. The person who said, and pardon my language here, it's his quote, that he, quote, took Turning Point USA and fucked it, and that's why it's filled with gripers.
Oh, man. It's like every time they try to bash on Nick, they can't help but bring his top comments. That was the funniest thing. I fucked DPUSA. I fucked it. And I will fuck your Apple cart. Oh my God, those were some of the funniest comments of Nick Fuentes. But yeah, you know, Nick Fuentes is right. That's why there are people in the crowd kind of on the booing side or more on the oh, whoa, whoa, whoa side. Nick Fuentes is right. And the fact that you have to talk about him almost every day now, Ben, it shows that he won. He won. And someone was very insightful about this on Twitter. We'll get to his quote. Well, it was actually, what's his name? This guy, Dave Smith. Dave Smith says the division on the right is not Candace Owens' fault, and it's not because Charlie Kirk was assassinated. It's because the president who ran on putting America first clearly puts Israel first. Now, this is important to understand. Nick is right when he says, I'm just a messenger. Nick himself doesn't matter, and he could, someone else could have occupied his role. Of course, he's the best talent to do it. So, of course, we're happy that Nick is carrying that torch. But someone else could have carried that torch, and Nick could disappear, or he could decide that he's not interested in anything public anymore. And those forces would still be here. We are still faced with the problem, the fundamental conflict between neocon approaches that are just basically saying, they're trying to bait the American people by saying, I'm going to give you a little conservatism, but you're going to have to be kind with Israel. I'm going to give you fighting against the trans library reading to kids. I'm going to give you maybe a little bit of woman sports without women with penises. But you're going to have to be on my side when it comes to Israel. And that deal is breaking. That deal is showing unsustainability. There's been way too much exploitation of the American people, of American money, and way too much institutional and cultural infiltration for this to remain long-term an acceptable deal. And Nick Fuentes basically doesn't matter. He is the messenger on this stuff. He is just in advance of his time. And the reason you have a Tucker Carlson coming to views of Nick Fuentes 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, is because Nick Fuentes, as he says, he has a better perception. He reads the people better. He knows the forces at play in the world before most people do.
If you have that person on your show and you proceed to glaze him, you ought to own it.
But what do we want Tucker to say here? You ought to own it. Tucker is owning his interview. He's not saying, I regret making this interview. So he's owning the idea that I'm going to talk to Nick Fuentes like a human being. He's owned it now.
There is a reason that Charlie Kirk despised Nick Fuentes, and indeed even chided Dinesh D'Souza for debating him. He knew that Nick Fuentes is an evil troll.
Now, Ben Shapiro has a point here. Because it's very easy to build Charlie Kirk into a fictitious character now that he's dead. But it is true that Charlie Kirk's position, to the last update we have about it, Charlie Kirk was for cancel culture for people like Nick Fuentes. So Charlie Kirk wasn't as hard line as Tucker in terms of being humanizing and inclusive of people with different opinions.
And that building him up is an act of moral imbecility. And that is precisely what Tucker Carlson did. He built Nick Fuentes up. And he ought to take responsibility for that, just as he ought to take responsibility for glazing pornographer and alleged sex trafficker Andrew Tate, or for mainstreaming fake historian and pseudo-Nazi apologist Daryl Cooper as America's best and most honest popular historian.
Wow. He's going hard on Tucker. He's going hard for Daryl Cooper, going hard basically saying we can't elevate these people. But yes, Roman Ram time, men time, this is gatekeeping. And here you can see the real Ben Shapiro. Real Ben Shapiro is hand in hand with Media Matters. Not a big difference. Maybe Media Matters has more gays. Ben Shapiro is more like family oriented. But basically, the heterosexuality is the only difference. Down the line, Ben Shapiro is for the control, the established monopoly and cartel of thought, of Zionist cultural infiltration of the U.S. Afro Accelerationism sends $50. Thank you so much for the generous donation. That is amazing, man. He says, isn't the fear of a post-DNA generation just biofragility? Why is clinging to a primitive, unchosen biological caste, DNA, more noble than joyfully hybridizing, creolizing? What a provocative word in the context of the revolutionary phenotype. We have a creole. We have a half machine creole here making an argument in the super chat. With the machine to create a superior form of existence. Well, here it is. Superior is not a thing. There's always one thing or another that happens, and some things outlive others. That's it. In certain worlds, the things that are outlived, in other worlds, they would have outlived the other things. So there's no superior between DNA, RNA, or QNA, DNA, or machines or humans. There's no superior. There's alternative directions for evolution. Now, there are certain worlds in which we completely smash the machine and it's not winning against us. There are worlds like this. There are worlds where science stops progressing. We engage in de-technologization and things don't head toward the replacement by the machine. There are other worlds in which the machine replaces us. If it's better on some measure, if it's vicious enough, if it's hidden enough that it can act on us and we don't have time to react. So let's start with this. The word superior here doesn't work. It's alternatives. Now, I claim that the human alternative is better. Because we are free individuals and we are in a free sexual species. By the way, we'll have someone during the Christmas vacations who will come on the show. He's kind of a maniac and he says, no one hears my arguments. No one ever talks to me. And I said, okay, I'm going to get you on my show, but I disagree strongly with you. He wants to combat sex. He wants to impose, I believe, a higher proportion of females in society by like sperm selection and all. And he wants a higher ratio of females and he wants kind of harems to develop from this. I'm going to give my argument to him. I think it's going to be on the 29th. Now, I argue that the human path is better than the centrally controlled machine path. And it's not even because of the machine aspect. I have nothing against metal. I have nothing against CPUs. And I love the internet, by the way. And I love fiber optics network. All of this is great. But those are tools. They are great as long as they are tools. The reason I object to the phenotypic revolution is that it is an abandonment of our meiotic nature. And it is abandoning sex as a method of assortment of genes and random assortments of genetics. Now, abandoning sex has massive consequences. And I describe, in every time I speak of TRP, I describe these consequences. We will lose everything that makes us creative, intelligent, free, driven, ego, because we will be transformed into sterile workers. So it's not that I would even object if we were to evolve into a metallic species. I don't have problems with metal. Meiosis enjoyers, rise up, says GM for the people. Yes. The metal is not the problem. The CPUs aren't the problem. The centralized control of sterile units is the problem. And there is no workaround. when you engage in the phenotypic revolution, that's where you're headed. You will lose your natural capacity to make children, and you will gain a catalog capacity of choosing your genes. Once you choose your genes, the machine is the reproductive agent. The machine contains your genes, and you're just a somatic cell in the city, in the organism that a city has become. Now, we don't want to become somatic. We don't want to become phenotypic. That's what we will become under a centrally controlled AI. That is why I object. And it is not superior. A centrally controlled AI is an alternative way of managing the human ecological niche. But it will be nothing like what you think it is. It won't be more intelligent, more healthy humans. It will be more submissive machines. Being a somatic cell is a massive decision. It's a stupid decision. Anyone would be stupid to make this. Now, it does happen that enslavement of sterile workers happened in natural selection. It happens, and it's good for the queen. But you'd be stupid, even if you're a bee, to choose that lifestyle. You'd be stupid to choose a lifestyle of slavery to a central system for genetic benefits that you never get. Because now you're just the participant to a communistic quantum success. GM for the People says, in a broad metaphoric sense, that ship sailed since we became obligate technologists in the Paleolithic, and our fitness became directly tied to our participation in the machine of whatever version. Yeah, and so that's why Ted K, in my view, is mistaken. Ted K was using technology. Ted K was using a little shack, even if it was a primitive shack. The idea of putting walls is using technology to survive. So there's no point at which, like, fire. Are you going to abandon fire? There's no objective point at which you could say, this is the beginning of technology. We probably forever, since the first thing that was a human from our detachment from chimpanzees, we probably always had some form of technology, even if it's just taking rocks and throwing them at each other or stuff like this. USPP4 says, I'm assuming somatic means as if they were on some the happy drug from Brave New World. Well, somatic has a much more important meaning in evolution. It's like the cells in your finger. The cells in your finger are somatic. They have no hope to reproduce. They only exist to serve your balls. If your balls are destroyed, these cells are meaningless. My hand is worth nothing if I can't reproduce. The only way I can ensure that there will be hands in the future is by my balls. That is what somatic means. Somatic means out of the genetic line and merely a secondary consequence of it. And it also means sterilization and enslavement. So sterile worker bees, for example, are somatic. Cells in our hands are somatic. They are just there to be enslaved. Now, it becomes very grave when your entirety of your existence is somatic, because you become enslaved, and everything that we find is valuable of human life is because we're not somatic. It's because we're actually trying hard to impress the girl. We're trying hard to have her laugh because we want vaginal access. GM for the People says, but it is reasonable to work together to create the desired interface to the machine and create an adaptive culture. For example, in comparison to old order Mennonites. Religion is like a cell membrane for the group. Well, if we're talking about the non-reproductive machine, like, yeah, of course, that's what I do every day. I contribute to the internet. I'm fine contributing to the internet. As long as the internet is phenotypic, as long as the internet is Semitic. I don't want to become the Semitic cell of the internet, though. Never. Afro Cell sends another $50. Thank you so much, bro. This gives me money for Christmas. Set up a tree, maybe. Set up some decorations. He says, if the revolutionary phenotype is the alpha replicator that inevitably replaces us, isn't your ethnostate just a safe space for the losing genes? Why are you trying to protect biology from the free market of evolution? For the same reason that I don't want to be blown up by a nuclear bomb. It's like, why don't you? Like, this was my classical response to a guy who was like, why do you want to care about surviving? And I was like, you care about surviving. You, like, everything you do in your life is about surviving. What if I was to put a nuclear bomb up your ass and blow it? Would you press that button? And so, yeah, it's like, I want to survive because things that exist want to survive. And anything that will keep surviving and existing on planet Earth will be that way. So I'm not different from the revolutionary phenotype when I care about my own continuation. He wants to care about his continuation. I want to care about mine. So we are in an existential conflict here. You don't have to justify why you want existence. The things that don't want existence, they'll disappear anyway. So among the things that exist, the debate, if you will, is all between things that want to exist. If you don't want to exist, it's going to be very easy to disappear. And you are therefore out of the discussion. The only discussion to be had are between things that do want to exist and that do succeed at existing. I claim we can make and like think about an invading army. What's your argument against the invading army? Huh? Do you have facts and logics to explain why you shouldn't let the invading army take over your country and kill you? I don't care about having an argument. It's an existential conflict. They want to kill me. I want to eliminate them. Afro-accelerationism says, thank you. That was awesome. Been a year. I was wondering after owning the book. All right. Well, thanks for... Wow, it's great. It's great. See, this guy has been... I don't think I've had much super chats from you before because I don't remember your nickname. But here's a guy who's been reading The Revolutionary Phenotype and asking himself genuine questions about it. Those are fair questions. But in the end, my response to those fair questions is, in an existential conflict, arguments actually don't matter. It's like, just like the non-aggression principle doesn't matter when you start talking about self-defense. Why? Because there's someone else wanting to kill you. So at this point, you need to either make a stand for your own existence or you let the other win and you just abandon life. But ultimately, down the line, all the things that exist will be things that want to exist. And therefore, when we talk of alternative routes for the direction of the evolution of humanity, we are talking inevitably about existential conflicts. It's either something will exist or something else. Both can't. Or if they can't both, it will be for a moment. But one of them is going to eventually dominate the niche. And people are losing their shit over Nick Fuentes.
You know, look, the Democrats have been insane for a long time. I feel like the Republican Party is going to move into this like DeSantis-esque neocon kind of territory. Maybe Dan Bongino coming back to this space can be a more unifying voice for the people who don't want to.
Bro, Tim Pool is so beside the track in his understanding. And here's another one. who's supposedly in the right wing, but what makes Tim Pool a right winger? Well, the fact that he votes Republican? So the Republican side has been so open and so broad to kind of be welcoming from everyone that was naturally rejected by the Democrats. At this point, we have another leftist, basically, who's giving his opinion on the strategies on the coming Republican positioning. Now, if you think that Dan Bongino will be a voice of unity going forward, Dan Bongino is a token that actually represents the problem of the current Republican Party, which is that they can flirt with quasi conspiracy kind of open-minded podcasters all they want. Once they are in power, they can't do anything spectacular. And in fact, they are constant disappointments. This is not going to unify anyone. To the contrary, there's going to be now a bunch of QAnon and Candace-fueled, crazies of the internet that will constantly bark at Dan Bongino.
I vote for Democrats, but outside, we can talk about the ban on child sex changes and all that. I'm just wondering what you guys think is going to happen to the political parties in this country, because there are a lot of people that no longer fit into the traditional Democrat or Republican space.
Well, I think that's why you're seeing the knife fight within the Republican Party right now. You're seeing, I think...
Yeah, they're saying get out.
Right. Well, and I think you're seeing the neocons, they're much more clever this time. They've crafted their message in a way that's much more appealing to the MAGA base. And that's why they're trying to poison the well ahead of time for J.D. Vance.
What I do hope happens is I hope that we will have our moment to say the Republicans lost, and they lost because of people like Ben Shapiro. I think that might be the most white-pilling possible outcome in terms of what should happen in the next year and even in 2028. We should have a moment where either J.D. Vance might actually detach himself and distantiate himself from people like Ben Shapiro. That would be awesome. Or we could have a defeat, and a crushing defeat that gets retained in history as this is what happens when the right basically becomes the left and doesn't differentiate itself enough in their kind of cancel culture practices. Milo sends $5. Thank you very much. Ariel Suarez sends 2 super chats. Wow, you guys are amazingly generous tonight. Thank you so much. Ariel Suarez says, wouldn't Habermas' performative contradiction be a valid argument for why survival is necessary for the ability to hold values in the first place? Also, for all her faults, Ayn Rand's stolen concept fallacy would be in line with the need for survival in order for valuation and argumentation to exist. What I have to Google about this. Habermas, performative. Habermas, performative contradiction. Refers to a situation where a speaker's actions or statements contradict the very conditions necessary for the validity of those statements. For example, if someone claims that communication should be free and open, but then engages in deceptive practices, they perform a contradiction. Okay, so it's like if I was to hold the argument, no one should ever speak. Well... And then people would be like, well, JF, you're speaking when you say this. So you're saying for why survival is necessary for the ability to hold values. Yes, and Stéphane Moliner has been making arguments along those lines. I don't think they are objective, but they are interesting ways to frame the necessary conditions for morality. And you could say, yeah, and I would phrase it different than Stefan, because Stefan is a moral nihilist, a moral realist. I'm a moral nihilist. He would say I don't even want to quote him because I'm not sure how he would phrase it, but he did say at some point something along the lines of, well, if you are engaging in arguments, you must have morality or something like this. Perhaps the way I would accept it is to say, if you are engaged in attempting to convince others or acting in the world, then you have preferences, because any action implicitly implies that you prefer the world to be in one state versus another. So even if you just walk, well, you preferred being forward than in your backward position. If you grab a grape, well, you preferred that this grape was in your hands rather than it being on the table. So you could say that action implies preferences, and that definitely preferences and actions, they come from agentic beings that can only be self-protective in certain ways. Because if you have preferences and you haven't used those preferences to self-destroy, then you prefer existing. And then, so most things that exist, this is a classic of the intro of The Selfish Gene by Richard Dawkins. Most things that exist, it's because they exist long enough and they're kind of insistent enough in their existence that we come to give them a name, a label. We come to say, oh, well, this has been hanging out for a long time enough that we should call it something. Like that's how a beaver exists. Because the beaver is there long enough that you can observe it and it starts mattering in your life and it builds them. And eventually you start realizing, oh, this little mammal is very different from all other mammals. And you end up calling it a beaver. Yes, I would accept this first super chat. Now, as far as your second statement, Ayn Rand's stolen concept fallacy would be in line with the need for survival in order for valuation and argumentation to exist. Stolen concept fallacy, Ayn Rand. The stolen concept fallacy occurs when an argument relies on a concept that it denies. Ah, yes, that's kind of the other face. The other face of the performative contradiction. Yeah, I like those ideas. I wasn't familiar with those phrasings. Very good ideas, Ariel Suarez. I agree. He says, JF, let me refine that. In order to have morality, you must, one, be alive, two, be conscious, three, be able to conceptualize. By doing X, I demonstrate that I, at least at that moment, have the ability to do X. Absolutely. I would leave the conscious on the side, because you could be an acting robot with certain implicit moral preferences built into your action-reaction paradigm without being conscious of them. And I would say you also don't even need to conceptualize. You could be a... Imagine You're a little CPU kind of hardware reflexive program, and all that reflexive program does is look around, find the most humid direction, and head there. You are a water seeker. You could say that this system has a moral preferences for humidity. And you could say that all of its actions, it's like, oh God, this CPU is really doped on wetness. Like, the CPU really prefers wetness. Ariel Soares says, yes, three is not always a requirement. Absolutely. I'll go check my breath, because I've been boiling for 4 to 6 hours now. And I'm very excited because I'm taking pictures regularly. So this will all be on White People Food, where I can show, look, this is how it looks when you're stuck from a chicken carcass. This is how it looks at the end. This is how thick it has to be. this is where you need to reduce it. So I'm going to go check my breath upstairs, and this is the end of the show. Much love, and thank you so much to you guys for your absolute generousness on the super chat. We are still here. We will still be commenting for years to come until I die. And Ariel Suarez says, do they really take so long to make ready? Absolutely. If you want to be serious about a stock, you need animal bones, carrot, celery, onion. You put all of this on a pan, aluminum paper or a pan, in the oven, 45 minutes, just roasting. Now you've browned the bones, you've browned the carrots, celery, and onions. You put all of this in a pot with water and you boil 6 to 8 hours. Now then you filter out this. Now you have this superb liquid with gelatin in, but it's probably too voluminous. Now you want to concentrate the taste that you've successfully extracted from the bone in the 6 to 8 hours. So you keep boiling, now with more aggressive heat. And now you get rid of water until it reduces at least half size. And then you're going to have that super jelly, that chicken jelly or that beef jelly with a super concentrated taste, with a little bit of thyme, salt, pepper that has infused in all this. And that jelly will be a basis for a sauce where it will occupy, if you want to go the brown sauce route in the classical French tradition, then you're going to do a roux. You're going to mix butter with flour. You're going to turn this into a brown roux by cooking it for 5-10 minutes. Now the roux mixed with the stock will give you a brown sauce with an intense chicken or beef flavor. And then you're going to do the little declinations of various flavor additions. Red wine, mushrooms, onions, shallots, Dijon mustard, maple syrup. And down the line, after 15 hours of work, you're going to have a sauce.